the Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
Episode 82. We don't have a name.
After the carnage.
After the carnage.
Audio carnage.
Audio carnage. Yeah. I like it.
Or is 1 week
better?
Later.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or something.
I'm sure this is better. Anything would be better than that broadcast.
Yes. Yeah, that was horrible. I take full responsibility. I'm sorry. It was my fault. I left our recorder at home, tried to record it on a different device,
well,
and it didn't
work
out.
Well, but you were
going to
go back and get it. We talked, and I thought, yeah. See, that's what I thought.
See,
and then,
now, we talked, and I did say, I think we should just not go back and get it, because it would have killed 3 hours for him. Okay.
I would have been missing things at the convention,
hanging out
with people.
And we were under the impression that our recording laptop will be able to handle it, and that was a mistaken impression.
Right. So, I mean, it was an even discussion between the two of us.
Yes.
And I was convinced that the laptop would work, and it did not.
And he convinced me that the laptop would work, at which point I said, don't go get the recorder.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, so...
So what did you do all week, Tony?
Epic Go Live.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're using a new program called Epic. And it's a medical
records
program.
Oh, I thought
program.
It was.
I know.
I thought he was saying it was the Epic Go Live.
Yeah. You know, as in 8 hours to edit the show, I think. What was your estimate? 8 hours?
Oh, yeah. It took me about 8 hours.
Yeah. So that was my little joke as to what you did. We knew what you did all half the week anyway.
And then at work, I put in extra hours, working late, weird schedules. So that was my week of finishing last week's show and no prep for this show. So,
all right.
Sorry, guys.
So,
I apologize.
There's a joke
second
in there
time.
Somewhere, but right. We'll just leave it hidden there.
All right.
So,
what did I do? Well, I only worked 2 days this week because it was only a 3 day week, and I took Monday off because of.
No wonder you want me to review Slackware, you slacker. Well, good for you.
So,
seriously,
I didn't really do much at work this week.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do, however, was spent a lot of time working my way through that Absolute Open BSD book.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's going along pretty nicely.
We'll have to
I just got to chapter 6. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to have it done in a month.
Is that the port system, or are you
no,
already past that part?
I'm not to that part yet.
Oh, okay.
You don't even install till the third chapter, Mary.
Oh, I've never let that stop me.
So...
Huh. Although I will say I've never had a successful BSD install, but the last time I did it was probably 6 or 7 years
really?
Ago. So
I've had several successful BSD installs. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I ran FreeBSD as a desktop for a little while.
Mm, okay. Well, we'll be following up. We'll be checking in with you, as to your progress with the book, and we'll an upcoming show. We'll enjoy the fruits of it, I think.
Yeah.
Great.
So what did you do, Mary?
I just sat by my computer waiting for the audio to come out. No. The show. No, I'm kidding. I didn't. It was kind of painful to listen to. But again, we already talked about that. So what else did I do? I upgraded my desktop to Kubuntu 13.4. And then I ended up... there's a tool I use that suddenly didn't work, so I have a virtual desktop now inside of the long-term support release, and it runs in there just fine, so I'm going to have to do it that way until it gets tested.
VirtualBox?
Yeah, I'm running VirtualBox. Okay. So I've kind of got Kubuntu inside Kubuntu.
Yeah.
Just so I can run this PHP thing.
Well, that's a good way to do it. I had to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a program that wouldn't run in Ubuntu, but it would run in Debian. So I ran a Debian VM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of grappled with that, trying to figure out how to make it work, and then I realized, I talked to the support folks, and we just said, they said, well, it's not been tested yet, and I said, okay, well, then we'll just do it this way.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I did. Nothing too exciting, I guess.
Cool.
Watched the playoffs. I didn't watch them, but I won't go into detail. Red Wings are down. That's all I'm...
They're not making it past the first round, Mary. Just face up to the facts so you can move on.
I'm not giving up on them yet. If they don't win tomorrow night, I will. Yeah, if they go back out west, down 3-1, I will agree with you then, but not until after tomorrow. Okay, enough of that. Yeah, so, you know, and one thing about, for those of you who didn't listen to the show last week, we had, it was pretty interesting. We had lights that were going on and off. We had, just a number of things that were challenging to us, I guess. Matt, I thought you were going to be taken into custody.
It was making me crazy.
It was making you crazy. He was getting, light running issues. Yeah.
I think that was one thing I don't think we made clear on during the show.
No.
If you made it through the sound problems, that while we're sitting there, all of a sudden the lights would go out.
Then they'd come back on again.
And Matt would yell gradually. Sometimes it was just super aggravating.
Yeah, they had to find a staff member from the hotel to figure out the lights.
The funniest one was when the one time when I was storming out the door to the other conference room, and the young lady from the other conference room was walking towards our door and saw me coming. She just turned around and ran away.
Yeah, how many people would if they saw Matt Enders coming toward them? Actually, the highlight of the whole show prep, though, was the sudden attack of gravity.
Matt falling over.
And we posted that picture in
Gravity.
Google Plus.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, well, enough of that.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
There is no release candidate, as we have a new Colonel. The brand new baby Colonel was born on Sunday, the 28th of April, 2013, at 17:56 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus released Colonel 3.9, and here's what he had to say about it. So, the last week was much quieter than the preceding ones, which makes me suspect that one reason RC7 was bigger than I liked was that people were gaming the system and had timed some of their pull requests for just before the release, explaining why RC7 was big enough that I didn't actually want to do a final release that week. Please don't do that. Anyway, whatever the reason, this week has been very quiet, which makes me much more comfortable doing the final 3.9 release. So I guess the last, RC8, ended up working, because not only aren't there very many commits here, even the ones that made it really are tiny and not pretty obscure and not very interesting. Also, this obviously means that the merge window is open. I won't be merging anything today, but if you start sending me your pull requests, Conrad already sent in his Zen pull request for 3.10 merge window a week ago. Tomorrow, the floodgates start opening. Stable updates. On Wednesday, May 1st, 2013, at 10:05 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kohartman released Colonel 3.0.76 with 42 files changed, 404 lines inserted, 120 lines deleted. Then on Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2013, at 10:06 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kohartman released Colonel 3.4.43 with 43 files changed, 421 lines inserted, 123 lines deleted. And on Wednesday, May 1st, 2013, at 10:06 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kohartman released Colonel 3.8.11 with 49 files changed, 454 lines inserted, and 166 lines deleted. My Colonel quote of the week comes from Greg Kohartman himself. With the Linux kernel merge window opening up and 3 RC stable kernels released, it seems like today is a stress test for the VGER.kernel.org Zmailer type of day. Amazed that thing keeps up with the traffic load. Great work, admins.
All right.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
What do you got on your plate, Tony, on the distro plate this week?
On the 29th, we have XDix 13. Arnie announced the release of XDix 13, the remastered Ubuntu.
I think that's just Arn.
It's not Arnie?
No.
Oh.
I was being nice.
I guess it would have to be IE, right?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, Arn. But it's a remastered Ubuntu with a customized GNOME 3.6 desktop.
Yeah. And by the way, too, you know, the X-Tix, are you done talking about them?
Yeah, well, I just noticed it has the dock at the bottom, or mm-hmm. the dock instead of having, like, the Unity dock. It has the, what's it called, the Cairo dock?
Cairo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been about a year since I reviewed them. I don't know if you remember. They were, like, one of the first distros I reviewed.
X-Tix. Oh.
and actually, this particular distro, they have switched their base. In other words, you know, they're a derivative, of course, but they at one time were based on Nopix. They were based on Paldo for a while. They were based on Debian Sid, and then they were based on Ubuntu. So they kind of had a little identity crisis, but they've obviously got that straightened out.
Yeah.
Okay, what else?
Cool. Going on next is on the 30th, we have a BSD release. Dragonfly BSD 3.4.1. And it's a fork of FreeBSD 4.8.
You know, they say Unix-like, which really isn't true for the BSDs. They are Unix.
No, it's BSD.
Which is Unix. BSD is Unix.
Unix-like.
No. It's an actual, if you trace the code back, the code is Unix. The code comes from Unix.
Hmm.
Well, but is that, well, you is that from your OpenBSD book? So.
No.
It's from Matt's head.
I just know this. No, it's true. That's what the lawsuit was with AT&T. Mm-hmm. It is Unix.
Conviction convinces,
Tony.
No.
The problem with it was AT&T sued them because AT&T decided to stop releasing it for free and start selling it because they're no longer under the restriction against being able to sell software because of the breakup of Ma Bell. Okay.
I see.
So they could now sell software. So they said, hey, we have this great Unix thing. Let's start selling it. And so then they told the universities, you have to stop distributing it. Well, Berkeley said, we've changed it so much that these changes are all ours. It's not really your...
It's not really Unix anymore? Is that what you were going to say?
It's not really your software. It's still Unix, but it's not AT&T's software anymore. It's mostly our software. So
this almost seems like a bettable event, doesn't it?
And I would win, so don't do it. Unless you want to lose $5. So then AT&T lost in court. And they I think the BSD people Berkeley had to take like... Two or four files out of it, and then the rest of it they were able to leave in because they said so. Then AT&T went on to sell Unix containing all of the BSD files.
Oh,
so that is the story behind BSD. It is Unix. It is not Unix-like.
Okay. Hmm.
Sometimes called Berkeley Unix is a Unix operating system derivative.
Right, directly derived from it. From the code. It
didn't say directly.
Oh, you know what?
It is. It's directly.
I know. I just am having so much fun giving you a hard time, Matt.
Yeah, and Chatter says that they can't use the word Unix
because
it's trademarked.
Right, because the word Unix is trademarked, so they can't use the word Unix. But it is Unix.
All right, cool. All right, so continuing on.
Little, you know, that should be like a new segment of the show. History with Matt Enders.
That's it. It's over.
our single segment. Hey, no, that was no. Seriously, though, that was interesting, and you are correct, Matt.
I know.
I'm not going to bet.
All right, cool.
I had to do a little. I'm not stupid. Not that stupid.
All right.
We took over your distro.
So on the 30th, we have CloneZilla Live 2.1.1-25. So Steven released it, and it's an updated version of CloneZilla Live, specialist CD, live CD for disk cloning.
I'm sorry, Tony, you were going to say something.
Yeah, and I've said this every single time this comes up. I've used it. I love it.
I have also. It's a beautiful piece of software. It works fabulously.
Well, I'm not going to say what I said last time, which is I haven't used it. But here's my question, because I did go out to the CloneZilla site. And now when you when you think Clonezilla, you think, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to clone, we're going to do this. I mean, very system level tasks and activities, which would imply that you want to have a stable. But from what the website said, it's based on Debian unstable.
It is.
So my question, this is more rhetorical, if it's used for partitioning and disk cloning, two activities that would seem to benefit from a more stable environment, why would it be based on unstable?
Because it's of the newer packages. Debian right. unstable okay. is stabler than most other distributions.
Well, and also, it probably has the latest drivers, latest kernel,
right.
and you okay. need the latest drivers to be able to pull those hard drive files and, right. and other file systems. Because it doesn't just do Linux file systems.
Right. It's not based on SID. It's mm-hmm. based on testing, I think. Might be yeah. based on SID, but I thought it was based on testing.
Well, it's. I think the website said
both considered unstable.
Yeah. Okay.
There is no actual Debian unstable. There's Debian stable, Debian testing, and Debian,
Debian
SID.
Less unstable and Debian unstable.
No. No, there's, okay. there's stable testing and SID.
All right. Yeah. And that was just a question I had when yeah. I saw it because there was a kind of a logic gap there. All right, Tony, next one.
Yeah. All right, the next one. The next one is Sabian Linux 13.04, which Fabio, is that right?
Fabio.
You got it right.
Giuliani, I think it is. And I'm not even looking at it.
He released it. It's a desktop distribution with the choice of GNOME, KDE, Mate, and XFCE. And it's based on Gen 2.
Yes, and it's named after an Italian dessert. Remember
Ooh.
That?
Oh, that's right. I do remember yeah. that now.
And actually, did you say that that 13.04 is the first release that will have systemd available optionally?
No, I didn't. Yes. I didn't know that.
Yep, and eventually it's going to replace OpenRC as a default for init system. You know, for the init system. At
you know,
some point.
Systemd is a beautiful thing. It makes boot mm-hmm. the boot process so much faster.
Hmm. Well, you can just see this shift. I mean, it's just, you know, it started with, who were the first, was it?
Fedora, I think.
Fedora?
Was the first one to.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can just start to see more and more now people, I think, oh, okay, this is going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's try it.
Right.
Yeah, so that you can start to see that now across other distros.
Yeah, but the boot process is just so much faster with systemd.
Is it because it can do things in parallel?
It does do them in parallel, yeah. That's why. It, as my boss would say, it parallelizes. You've got to be able to parallelize your work.
All right.
I think he made that word up.
He might have, but I understood it.
All right. All right, and the next release is another BSD release, and that is OpenBSD 5.3, which is Stuart Henderson announced it, and it's a free multi-platform operating system with a strong focus on security and net code released. I don't know what that word is.
What's FreeBSD's slogan? Does anybody know?
No.
Secure by default.
All right.
FreeBSD?
OpenBSD.
OpenBSD.
Sorry, misspoke. OpenBSD.
All right.
Secure by default.
Well, you know, and why would they call it open? I would call it secure BSD.
It's open as in the freedomness of
oh,
it.
Oh, I see. Of course.
Because that's their argument is that the BSD license is a truly free license, whereas the GPL is
all right,
not.
I have a question for you. Now, when this this release had several, quite a few, you know, changes and that type of thing, do you know how many they had? Okay. Here, I'm going to give you three numbers.
Okay.
Did they have 683? Did they have 970, or did they have 1,039 changes? Mm. The littlest, middlest, or biggest?
Middlest.
I made that word up. No, actually, they had 1,039. You're probably wondering, and
is
they
that
only
lines
had the list.
Or is that actual changes?
Actual changes. Because I went to the website, checked it out, and I thought, wow, look at the length of this thing. And I thought, well, I'm not going to count it. So I just simply highlighted it all and dropped it into Calc and then took a look at the last row and said, oh, okay, 1,039.
That may not be accurate. What you should do
is run.
No, because it could be have word wrap. It could have wrapped the text.
No, it did not.
From one line to the next. The best way to do it would be to run nano minus W, which turns off word wrap, and turn on line counting, and then it'll bottom one over.
I don't know. Pasting and all seeing right. that the change number as the first entry in each row worked for me.
How about we get back to the distros?
All right.
I think nano minus W.
Okay. Right. I'm sure it works probably pretty well. How was that, Tony?
All right. So on the 2nd, we have Parted Magic 2013_05_01. And Patrick released that one. It's an updated version of the live CD containing useful tools for data rescue and disk management.
Yeah. Now, I've used this mostly with Clonezilla, because the reason I used Clonezilla would be to move operating system from a smaller hard drive to a larger hard drive.
Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then I would have to blow up the file system afterwards. And mm-hmm. for that, I used Parted Magic.
Okay. Yeah.
So I used them in conjunction a lot. But I also always noticed that their releases are always right on top of each other.
Yeah, you know what? I've noticed that too.
Why is that? They're not the same project. They're not related.
They must share something.
I don't know what, but yeah, they're always right on top of each other.
Yeah, well, but the Parted Magic project, they did write a new program to help prepare USB drives for booting Parted Magic. It's called, surprisingly, USB Boot Flash.
All right.
It came from some code in Puppy Linux. And they also, their kernel, they upgraded their kernel to 3.8.10. So.
Cool. All right, continuing on, we on the 2nd also is Cora Linux, or Cora 18. And
Corora.
Corora. Okay.
Because there's an extra syllable in there that the Cora is just missing.
But if you move your head kind of fast, it sort of blends in together because it's just O-R-O-R. Corora.
Corora.
Oh, that sounded good.
A Fedora-based distro with a large number of tweaks, tools, and extras for improved user friendliness.
Yes. And actually, you know, this was a Gentoo-based distro before they went to Fedora, but I went to the site and they say that it is now possible to upgrade from Corora 17 to 18 thanks to Fedora's FedUp tool. So, and then they follow it with, should you encounter issues, please perform a fresh install.
That's funny. All I know is I used FedUp twice and it worked flawlessly both times.
Cool. Well,
I'm sure it does. It's just that I just kind of cracked me up the way they said that. If you have a problem, well, do a fresh install.
Right. So. Yeah, don't come to us.
Don't call us.
Because you know why?
Why?
They didn't write it.
Right. All right. Going on, we have OpenELEC 3.0.2, which is a bug fix for OpenELEC security project or security updates for the XBMC-based distro. And that's what I use for my Raspberry Pi. Continuing on, we have, and it's actually 5.5 this morning.
It's the big one.
It's the big one.
Big one.
The mother of all distros.
Not only is it the latest one, but exactly, it's the base of so many distros.
Yes.
Debian 7.0.
Wheezy is now stable.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what to say about
We've
it.
Never, it's I know, we have never, I don't think we've ever mentioned a Debian.
Because the release cycle is so long.
I know, I checked, it was like 2 years or something. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Pretty
so
impressive.
It's going to be 2015 before we have another. Anyway.
No, they do point releases.
But it's
every 2 years, though.
Yeah, it's something long.
It's a very long
because I don't remember seeing it on here before.
He looks he's got a little uncertainty in his eyes. Tony, now's our chance.
Anyway,
but no, I did check because when I saw Debian pop up there, I thought, wow, that's momentous.
Yeah, it's very good.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Number 5 is Sabian. 1522.
And trending up.
Number 4 is Debian with 1880.
And trending up.
Number 3 is Magia.
The cheaters at even. Oh, I'm sorry, you got to say the number.
2173.
And now I say, the cheaters are even.
Number 2 is Ubuntu with 2504.
And trending down.
Back at number 1 is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness. Almost forgot. I was daydreaming.
Yeah, because I was going to just put something right in there. I was waiting. With
35, 46.
And trending down.
Yeah, I was about to say it too. I'm like, we've done the same thing for how many shows?
Well, we haven't been in our normal environment.
You're right.
In how many weeks?
I think it's been at least 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, we recorded 2 weeks at your house.
Yeah.
Then a week at PenguinCon.
Yeah.
So it's been a month since we've been
here. Yes.
I know. And you have those same three beer bottles up there on the shelf.
Actually, there was two last time. I just put the one up there today.
I like the addition.
I know.
Ernie. You like Ernie?
I like Ernie.
Oh, Ernie. I didn't, yeah. Okay, yeah, from Sesame Street. I didn't see that. Okay. Okay, well, I guess what comes next?
Actually, we had a Highlander asked us a question.
Oh.
It says, could you guys at some point reveal to the public what your first distro you installed was and what year it was? My first distro was Red Hat, and I can't remember the exact version. It was 4.5, if I remember right, or 4.4 or 4.3, somewhere in there, and it was 2002. But I was just like messing around with it, installing it,
right,
seeing if it worked, wiping it, installing it. Yeah, it was a couple years old then. And then, but my first production machine, I ran as a server, like a file server and web server, mail server. And I had Slackware on it. And that was my first real Linux machine.
My very first machine ever that I installed was Red Hat also, 5.2 in 2001. And and then I discovered this thing called PenguinCon, and they were having local lug was having this install fest there, so I took it in my machine in there, and we installed Red Hat 9 on it.
Ooh.
And but then my first production machine that I ran on a server was Debian.
Yeah.
Debian.
Hmm.
How about you, looking Mary? At me? Well, let's see. Oh, if I tell you that, I'll tell you how old I am. No, just kidding. the first one I bought, I remember when they were selling, I think it was OpenSUSE, I believe.
I did buy SUSE when you could buy it at Best Buy.
Yep.
I did that also. Yeah.
And it was back, I believe that it was OpenSUSE and not Fedora Core, because
it wasn't called OpenSUSE at the time. It was just called SUSE.
Yep, SUSE Linux. And I got that and installed it. And then a friend of mine worked at Silicon Graphics as a programmer. And I said to her, oh, I'm gonna learn Linux. I'm gonna run this. And she looked at me and she said, well, you may want to think about that, because at the time it wasn't nearly as user friendly as it is now. And it would have been a kind of a tough road, but at the time for me, but
Silicon Graphics
still is.
Isn't that SGA?
Yeah.
Oh. Wasn't she
Silicon
running
graphics?
Running on a Unix computer?
Probably.
That Linux was going to be hard.
If she was running an SGI box, she was using Unix.
Silicon Graphics. This was
SGI,
in Minnesota.
Yes.
What was the company?
Right there.
Yeah, Silicon Graphics. Yep. Yeah. Weren't they based in Minnesota for a while before they went out to California?
Not sure.
Wait a minute, Cray. Oh, I had it mixed up. I think maybe she was at Cray.
Cray is still a big Unix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Mainframe.
Cray, yeah. They
have their own operating system.
I said, I'm gonna start using it, and she kind of chuckled.
Very cool. When was that?
This was back in the late 90s.
Wow. 98. Mary's been running Linux longer than both of us.
Yeah.
I'm not just another pretty face. So it's been a while, but again, it was just, I just dabbled with it and didn't really, you guys kind of, I think when you started, you just jumped right into it. I dabbled with it. And because I have attention deficit disorder, I was okay. I played with that. I'm on to something else, but no, I was starting a little company at the same time. So I focused on that instead, but
you're right. I switched to it as my full-time desktop within like 2 weeks of first installing it.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. See, I did not until
from Windows 98. I was running Windows 98.
I didn't switch my desktop until 2006, and that was Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tried Ubuntu a couple times before that.
Warty Warthog?
Warty
Warthog.
And the wireless drivers weren't quite there, or the card I had wasn't quite right, working right. Mm-hmm. So I finally got one I knew worked in Linux, and it was with the Athos chip.
Yeah.
And, I remember, oh, I remember wireless drivers in Linux. I bought stock in the company.
I
bought $100 Aeronet card I was guaranteed it would work because the chipset had its drivers in the kernel. There was no effing around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was good. Yeah. But Athros, yeah. Cause I remember that. Well, the first distro that I got wireless to run in was Mepis. And that's why I've always liked Mepis and Debian based distros because of that.
At the time, I had a friend tell me, if you dual boot, you're not going to go back to Linux here because you're used to doing everything in Windows and you're barely going to be over there. So mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? That's it. I'm just installing Ubuntu and then going on. So
yeah.
Chatter asks, which Debian version? And it was 5.
You know, I can never remember the point number or whatever version that I've for Debian.
Yeah.
It's just
it
Debian.
Was 5.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think 2000, I believe 2003 is when I switched over to using Linux, quote unquote, cool. full time.
Yeah.
But I was really sad and nervous about it because I had used Windows so much. You know, I was just afraid that, I'm going off. I don't know anybody who uses this and blah, blah, blah. Well, little did I know, there's a whole group. Yeah, there's a whole, that's when I started going to MD Lug meetings. I thought I better start hanging out with people who know something. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well, that was fun. Thanks, Highlander, for sending us off on that little trip down memory lane, which was bumpier for some of us, I guess.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Yeah, so, all right, well, I don't really have, well, this week, of course, normally the question would be what's on SDA6 or what distro am I reviewing this week? Well, I'm actually not reviewing a distro this week. I'm going to just talk a little bit about a project. And I did install the distro associated with this project, and I took a look at it. I'm going to talk about some of the tools. So I guess maybe it is a review. I don't know. But I didn't
review more with concentrating on the one project. Is that more like?
Yeah, well, I mean, this project is called OWASP. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not. It's the Open Web Application Security Project, and it's a nonprofit organization / foundation. It's worldwide that focuses on making sure that web applications are secure. So with that in mind, they have a distribution. Now, the thing of it is it's never really hit the front. I don't think it's hit the front page of DistroWatch, although I could be wrong, but about 3 or 4 years ago, they came out with a live distribution of theirs with the tools on it. And then earlier this year, as a matter of fact, it was, I believe it was in January, they came out with Mantra OS, which is an installable version of that earlier tool set. And it's Debian-based, but I went in and took a look at some of the tools, and I wanted to talk a little bit about them because some of them were pretty fascinating, and some of them were a little dated because I think that perhaps from the time they had put it out on the first CD to the time they released this one, they perhaps did not update it. But one was called HTTP print.
Okay.
What it does, and it's a tool designed to accurately fingerprint web servers. I didn't even know they had hands. No, I'm kidding. Okay, that was a bad joke, but although you guys did laugh at it, it's usually if you go to a server, you know, it'll send out information about itself, tether,
correct,
banner, whatever it's
called.
Well,
and you can query its port and get information.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some servers are locked down not to give very much information, but apparently, you can still infer information about that server by the way it does certain things.
Correct.
And so what this...
Nmap does that too.
Yeah, and what this tool was designed to do is to make some intelligent guesses about the kind of server that you're interacting with. So anyway, but it also will do things like... inventorying of web-enabled devices such as printers, routers, switches. I think the problem with it, though, is that it's an older version. It was an older version on the distro that the Mantra OS distro I was looking at. And by the way, Mantra OS will not be on Is It Alive today. I just want you to know that, so get that out of your minds. There was another tool that absolutely fascinated me, and that tool is called Multego. Now, I talked, you know, before the show started, I talked to both of you guys, and neither one of you had heard of it. And what this tool does is it essentially queries websites for all kinds of information about, for example, I put Google in there and found their mail servers. I found all sorts of touch points in Google.com that were related to various web servers and various other kinds of servers that they had. Now, Multego, when I first installed it, and you have to join the site. They've got two versions. They've got a community version, and then they've got a paid-for version, which gives you more capabilities. As I started to install it, there's a little window that pops up, and it says, Multego is an open-source intelligence and forensics application. Now, if you take that statement at face value, what's your impression of this, that it's an open-source it's open-source software,
that's
right?
That's what it says on their website, too, by the way, that exact statement.
Yes.
It's on their website.
It is not open source software.
What?
It is not.
Why?
Their definition of open source intelligence is intelligence that is open to the public. So, for example,
it's like open data, not open source
software. Yeah. Well, they never call themselves open source.
No.
It says Multego is an open source intelligence. It does say open source.
Yeah, exactly. So, and my first impression, and when I did some research on this, looking to see, for example, I went out to find some tutorials on how to operate this, this application and some other things. People kind of took that at face value and they said it's an open source, blah, blah, blah. But, if you go to their website and click down on their license, you're going to see that it's your typical restrictive license. And
well,
so,
somebody should tell the OSI, because the OSI owns the term open source, and they can't use it like that.
So, yeah. Because it is a little misleading.
It is very misleading, mm-hmm. And they can't use it like that.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, and they do, because I took a picture of the install window here, and that's where I saw it. And again,
it says it right there on their website.
Yeah.
Multego is an open source intelligence and forensics application.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they get away with it because it's open source intelligence, not open source software.
It's open. They say open source. I'm pretty sure the OSI's thing is on the word.
But what you do is, I registered on the site. I downloaded the software, and you can download an RPM. You can download a deb package, and I think you can also download a tar.gz file and install it that way. Anyway. Once you install it, you can provide it with an email address. You can provide it with the name of a website, any other number of entities, and then request that it do what are called transforms. And I think we tried to do one here before the show, and because of the internet, you know, the bandwidth was not very good at the time, and so I couldn't really do too much. I think we took a look at one little one, Tony. When yesterday when I was at home and I did one for Google, it was pretty impressive how many mail servers it found, how many the DNS servers it found, all sorts of different Google servers, and then it lays them all out, and then from there you can do additional research on any one of those. You know, again, it's supposed to be used for positive positive work and not, you know,
right,
bad things. But anyway, I thought that tool was very fascinating from the short amount of time I spent with it. And there's a video tutorial that was pretty interesting. It was filmed in a coffee shop, so you could hear the coffee machines going on in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy talking about it. Yeah. So
very cool.
So there was that tool. There's also something on there called WebGoat. Have you guys heard of WebGoat?
No.
Okay. WebGoat is a purposely insecure. Let me just flip to my notes here because I lost them. I have too many windows open. It's a deliberately insecure J2EE web app maintained by the project, and it's designed to teach web application security lessons. So, in other words, it's students can attack it or can do different things to it, and then they will have a better understanding of how to secure their, you know, their web server. And and I think J2EE, isn't that a Java? Is that Java, I think?
J2, yeah.
Yeah. So So they can, for example, in one of the lessons, a user must use SQL injection to steal fake credit card numbers. The application is a realistic teaching environment, providing users with hints and codes to further explain the lesson. So I thought that was kind of a nice tool for learning that type of thing.
Yeah.
And in addition, there, several tools will open a terminal when they're activated. They've got something called SQL Brute, which again, you'll use from a terminal. They've got something called a Fierce Domain Scanner, which is used to scan non-contiguous domains. So, in other words, sometimes corporations will have a number of domains or IP addresses in this one block here. Maybe they've got some in another block. What this does, it's kind of difficult to discover large swaths of corporate networks that are non-contiguous. So what this tool does is it makes it a lot easier. But they said it's not an IP scanner, and it's not a DDoS tool. I suppose they had to say that because of the lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
and it's not designed to scan the whole internet or performed untargeted attacks. Again, it's a tool just to test your own networks, and especially if you're a large company. And it's this Fierce Domain Scanner is a Perl script. So that's in there.
What is it called? Fierce?
It's called Fierce Domain Scanner.
Yeah, that is cool. We use that at work.
Ah, okay. There you go. Welcome, Matt. Where were you?
Yeah. I'm still researching something, so I'm only paying half attention to what you're saying.
Okay.
What do you guys use it for, Matt?
When we... Our record keeping may not be the best.
sometimes
have an IP that says... And we have two different places we have to check, and both places say, yes, this IP is available, but then something on it's pinging.
Oh, yeah. Not so available.
No.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, so that's there. Some other terminal-based tools, Rat Proxy, and then, of course, Metasploit, which I think everybody's heard of. That's available, and then Nmap, and then something called WAPITI, which WAPITI. That's not right. It'd be WAPITA.
Right.
It's a web application vulnerability scanning and security auditor. So those are some terminal based tools in this distro. It also had something called Burp Suite. Now.
Burp
what?
Suite?
What?
I thought, well, that'd be perfect.
Tony writing software now?
Yeah. I believe he's co-writing it with Matt. what this does, it's an integrated platform for performing security testing in web apps. Again, most of the stuff is, and it will, do initial mapping and analysis of the application's attack surface through defining and exploiting security vulnerabilities. And, it's got, I copied a number of the different things that it has, like an intruder tool, it's got a repeater tool, sequencer, application aware spider, so it'll crawl the site. So it sounds like a really good tool for testing your own network. I said, make sure our lawyers don't.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, we don't have
only
any.
Use it on a network where you have permissions to use it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Matt, because I was during my research. The only difference between hacking and penetration testing is the permission.
Yes. Is that little piece of paper that says,
you can do this. Yeah. So that's
And then only
funny.
Stuff that's in scope. Don't attack things that are out of scope when you're doing your pen testing, or you can get in trouble also.
Yes. Yes. So, that was the distro. It's Mantra OS, and it's put out by the OWASP project, and I believe that's owasp.org. And they have a chapter here in Detroit. I think their last meeting was in March. OWASP. And it looks to me like they meet quarterly, from what I could tell. And their last meeting was in March, so it's probably June. I think next month, maybe. So I was thinking of getting on their mailing list. But it was an interesting distro.
Cool.
Oh, and Matt, it did have Abbey Word on it. And numeric.
All right. As long as there are productivity tools.
I had a ton of those, but of course that was for, pen testing and that type of thing. So.
Because you've got to be able to record your documentation of the pen test.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Okay. Okay, well, that's all I got for my little, I guess that is a review, isn't it?
Yes.
My little series of statements about the project.
Thank
well,
you, Mary.
Well, that's because I... Yeah.
And just as an aside now, I've been, while Mary has been delivering her...
Blabbing.
Her, no.
My ramblings.
Pertinent information, good stuff, mm-hmm. as always. I've been researching open source, and I cannot find a definitive answer on whether the term open source is copyrighted by the OSI or not.
Mm.
So, if anybody out there knows, let us know, because it really disturbs me that they use that term and they're mm-hmm. not. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, no, and I understand where you're coming from, but I got to tell you, I would suggest people try that tool out, even though the tool itself is not open source, just to try it out.
Right.
I mean, it's not something I would use.
I use tons of stuff that's free but not open source, so mm-hmm. I have no problem doing that. But
it was pretty
their
impressive.
Use of that term that really. Mm-hmm. Really is bothering me. So.
Well, they in another spot on that site, as I said earlier, they do define what it is. And I said, okay, that makes sense. So let me go find their license and see how it's constructed. Right. And it's your standard EULA type thing. So, okay.
Cool. When you install it, do you have to click through it?
I think so, yeah.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
I only have two stories. So, my first story up is PHPMyAdmin 4.0 released. The well-known database administration tool PHPMyAdmin,
which I love,
has released version 4.0. If you're used to using it, it's going to be different, way different. There's a pretty major rewrite. They have done away with the HTML tables and gone with a tree-style layout. The new layout is driven by JavaScript. They have also written much more of PHPMyAdmin in object-oriented programming, in particular some table browsing code and several smaller features. PHPMyAdmin also works with MariaDB, in case you were wondering.
Oh, and you know what's interesting? I use PHPMyAdmin when I'm working with my databases that are on oneandone.com. And that's an older version. The one that's in the repositories that I install on my laptop is a newer version. And you can definitely tell that, but it'll be interesting to see, this.
Yeah. Cause we have it integrated into, mm-hmm. One of our,
I really like it.
We have a control panel at work that we sell called Interworks.
Okay.
We have PHPMyAdmin actually integrated into that. When you go into the database management part of the control panel, it fires up PHPMyAdmin.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah, I had to, I can't remember if we were talking about this before the show, but, I've got a virtual box of Kubuntu so I can run this program. I think we did talk about that, at the start. Anyway, it's what I did last week. I end up having to, either they've got that limit, that 2 megabyte limit as far as, uploads or.
Well, that's megabyte? Changeable in the php.ini.
Exactly. I had to do that. I changed it to 20 because
I know that from. Running Moodle.
Oh, yeah, Moodle. Yep, yep. So there were three changes to the PHPNE file I had to make in order to take care of that problem. So once I did that, bingo, it went in. It was a database or couple tables, I think. So.
You know, though, you cannot set that number too large. If you set that number very, very, very large...
It'll time out?
No, and running a 32-bit system, it winds up setting it to -1 gigabyte. And nothing is negative.
And everything downloads?
And you can't log in. You can't do jack.
Oh, I was going to say, it downloads to you.
No.
Oh, yeah. That would not be good. Yeah, well, I figure 20 is not.
Do you know how I found that out?
Oh, I don't know, man. How did you find that out?
The hard way.
Okay. Oh, it's a good story, though.
Yeah.
It's a good
be
mad.
Be careful if
it's
you're running it on 32-bit.
I'm used to getting those Matt stories at the beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Hey, that's how we learn. We break shit and then
exactly.
have to fix it.
No, you're those are the best learning experiences right. because you're kind of on the line there to get it fixed.
Right.
You know, and you really.
Especially when it's like 8 o'clock on Sunday night and school starts at 7 a.m. on Monday.
So how long were you there?
A little late.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, next up. I forgot what I was doing there for a second.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
Yeah.
Next up, we have a look at Tor a year after going DRM free.
Tor?
Tor, the books.
Oh.
In April of 2012, Tor Books UK, along with Tor and Forge, removed all DRM from their ebooks. At the time, this is what senior editor Patrick Nielsen Hayden had to say about the decision. We see it in the success of SF publishers like Bane and Angry Robot that have preceded us in going DRM free. To the best of our knowledge, we're the first division of a Big Six publishing conglomerate to go down this road, but we doubt very much that we will be the last. They saw that their readers had been asking for non-hobbled content, and their authors had also. They made the decision to remove DRM because it does not effectively stop piracy and hinders legitimate purchasers from reading their books how they choose. This has put Tor, Tor UK, and Forge in the forefront of their industry. After a year, they say that sales are strong and they do not regret the decision.
That's very cool.
Yep.
So people can read those.
Yeah. Books, so anytime you buy a Tor book, a Forge book, or a Tor UK book off of Amazon anywhere.
Oh yeah, Tor. I know. That's the publisher.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I was thinking the Onion Router at first. And I'm thinking, what the heck? I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to sound stupid. But too late.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anytime you buy any of their books, like off of Amazon, Barnes and Noble, anywhere, it's completely DRM free.
Cool.
So support them. They're with us. They said that most of the reason behind it too is because their readers, science fiction readers, mm-hmm. are on the forefront of technology usually, mm-hmm. and they're using different devices, different operating systems, just different ways of trying to read these books, and DRM was just really getting in the way,
as it usually does.
Yeah.
Right.
That
was your second story.
That was it.
Actually, I found a few things. I don't know if you've ever tried this. Well, maybe you have, Matt.
Depends. Does it involve a donkey?
Depends. Depends and dongle. Depends and dongle in the same sentence is kind of frightening, but anyway.
I said donkey.
Oh! Poor Tony. Tony's giving me the evil eye. I think I've driven the cart off the road, and I'm stuck in the mud.
We pushed hard, Mary, and we got there.
We pushed hard getting it in the mud. Okay. All right. Sorry, Tony.
That's all right.
All right. Oh, I'm almost crying. I'm laughing. Okay. All right. Well, back to more serious things. You know, the old Linksys routers, you could, I think that, weren't they running Linux as, Matt, I'm talking to you. Can you help me? Okay. I'm kidding on that.
One version did ship with Linux, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, they, and I really hadn't seen much about this, that particular project, but they, the router Linux, open, WRT, they just released, their latest version.
Yes.
And I have a Linksys router at home, and I have thought about maybe I should.
I've put DDWRT on.
Okay.
And
open
I like
WRT.
It.
Really?
No, well, I've used DDWRT, which is based off of Open mm-hmm. WRT.
Oh, okay.
They just make really it a little like more user friendly to put on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what are you able to do that you can't do normally?
All kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Well, the biggest thing I was looking for was doing port forwarding. Thing? To okay. a different port than what the incoming port was.
Right, and it'll let you, most of the, they're kind of locked down. They'll mm-hmm. let you forward one or two ports or forward to one machine.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you put the DDWRT on there, mm-hmm. you're open. Wide open. You can forward this port to this machine, this port to this machine,
okay.
all yeah. ports to this machine.
Mm-hmm.
It also allows for wireless bridging and using the wireless as the WAN. Yeah, so... That's
wow.
really, those things
pretty
were
impressive.
What I was looking for.
I knew that's why I picked that story, because you guys have some good information to share. But no, I just remember that, and I know I've got one sitting that's doing nothing right now, and it just kind of crossed my mind. Ooh,
yeah.
I should try that as a project. But I'm still trying to get through Linux from scratch.
So. Just do Slackware.
Oh, no. Slackware is a fabulous distro, but I just don't think...
It's real easy.
No, it's not, Matt.
Yes, well, it really is. You're very misled. You're misled. You're mistaken.
Well, it...
They even have package management.
Well, Slapped, I know, but...
No. They have Slack
package. I
heard
package. They don't.
Slack package. It's not on by default, but you just turn it on. It's super easy.
Did you guys see? I'm moving on to the next the next link that I've got here because I you know Bruce Schneier. You know who Bruce is,
Schneier?
Right? Schneier. Okay.
I subscribe to his newsletter.
Okay. Did you see his most recent comments about the why the FBI and the CIA did not? This is on actually was on CNN.com. Why they did not connect the dots, and now you know there's the calls for even more information to be. The government to suck in even more information to try to find this stuff out. And his premise and thought is that more information is not going to get the
we'll
job.
We'll be done. England. We'll be freaking London.
Hey, and we love our London listeners.
We love our London listeners. London is the most surveilled city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I am more of the German bent. The
German... We'll shoot you at the airport.
No, they have almost no public surveillance. In Germany, it's illegal to publicly surveil people in Germany because of their privacy issues. They take personal privacy very strong in Germany, and it goes back to the Nazi days when informing on your neighbor was the norm, and they want to get away from, they want to totally get rid of that attitude, so they're very low surveillance now, you know. So.
Oh, well, that could very well be the case. I just remember, I mean, I've been to Germany several times, even Berlin, which is a cool city. And I remember at the Frankfurt airport, we saw a guy with a machine gun. I mean, he must have been airport police or something. And it just was, he just had his machine gun out. And I just thought, wow, I'm just not used to seeing that.
Yeah, really.
But, you know, it was definitely an eye-opener. I thought his comments on that, and there'll be a link to that in the show notes for anyone who's interested. And again, that was on the CNN.com website. Another item I saw.
We have a question from the IRC.
Yes.
Highlander is asking what Tor is. They're a publisher of science fiction books.
Yeah, it's a publisher, not the Onion Router.
Right.
Like I thought. Okay, well, the other one that I had was that there's apparently the FBI wants a back door into all internet products and services, and so they're now starting to push or some legislation starting to push through on that.
That does not surprise me, although that's horrible.
It's
kind of
tied
why...
into Bruce Schneier's comments.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw that, and this just reminds me of the whole what passed the House of Representatives? Was it CISPA?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was stopped by the Senate.
Okay.
The Senate squashed
this
it.
Time.
This time, yeah.
This time.
I mean,
yeah.
It's
gotta
stay vigilant because
gotta
it's stay
pay attention
back
to that. I tell
back.
You, they're gonna. Yeah, they just think more information, more is not better.
Right.
So right. All right. Anyway, so those are some news stories that kind of more along the tinfoil hat. Yeah, the tinfoil hat segment.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of things for KDE Corner this week. Recon 2.3 has been released or was released, I think, recently, which is the browser that...
And speaking of KDE, you really have to give me that website because I tried to remove a Condi and it wanted to take... I would not have had a functioning desktop if I'd have taken it off.
Yeah.
It wanted to take so much with it. So I need that website so I can get that.
Yeah, you need to remove like KMail. You need to remove you need to remove those apps first, and then you pull out this folder. I'll find that site for you, Matt, and I just got to remember to do it. Send me an email if you haven't heard from me in a day or two.
Okay.
Okay. So the other KDE item I have is and I saw this on a blog posting, and I'm going to go ahead and I'll post that. It was on Saro Engel's blog. He says, "Hi, everyone. After over a year of silence, I have something new to announce. I will make a new release available of the KDE SC, and that's, of course, to say KDE software compilations on Windows. He's going to release, you know, KDE on Windows. That's something that was available. I think maybe still is, but it might be an older version.
Really?
You can put KDE on Windows, yeah.
I didn't know
because it's
that.
More of a – it runs more like a – I'll say a desktop. I mean, a lot of the KDE tools are available and all of that. It's really kind of interesting. So I wanted to make a mention of that. So he just wanted to make sure that it was obvious that KDE on Windows isn't dead yet. So yeah, so that's something to look forward to. I'll kind of keep an eye out for it, and we'll post when that's out and available. And that's really all that I had for my news this week.
Very cool.
How about you there, Tone Man?
I saw one thing that where did it go? Ah, there it is. Wikipedia drops MySQL, and they're using MariaDB now.
Yeah, with MariaDB.
Oh.
Yeah. So it looks like it's happening more.
I'm
going
to ask 1&1.com, my web hosting company. Hey, when are you guys going to go to MariaDB?
They'll tell you it's available now. Just use it.
Well, 1&1.
You think so?
No. I think you'd have to ask for it.
Yeah, I'll probably ask for it.
Because they only have, like, well, they had two versions of MySQL available, and that was it?
Yeah. I don't know. They tend to be a little behind as far as versions, a little bit older versions. Because I just think when you upgrade, when you're that
most
big.
Most web hosts are.
It must be difficult.
You don't want to break your customer's stuff.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we have customers that can't migrate off of PHP 5.2.
Okay.
Huh.
So they're stuck on PHP 5.2.
What's the current version?
5.3.
Oh.
Tools from the toolbox.
Mary has a very good suggestion for the toolbox this week.
I do. And it is a tool called, and I'm going to pronounce it as Linus.
L-Y-N-I-S.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yes. Oh, is it I or Y? Yeah, looking
it's
at
L-Y-N-I-S.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
And you're pronouncing it, well, how are you pronouncing it?
Linus? Linus?
Are you saying Linus?
Linus? Linus?
I said Linus.
Linus?
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds remarkably like Mr. Torvald's first name.
Right.
Spelled, you know, the vowels, I think it's the vowels are what's tricky. But that aside, what's really neat about this is that this particular, first of all, in Debian systems, I think you just do apt-get install and then L-Y-N-I-S.
Yep.
And then you invoke it by at the command line by typing L-Y-N-I-S -C, and it's going to scan your system and reveal any vulnerabilities that you've got. What I found out when I did it on my laptop is that I am permitting, not by design, but by oversight, root login via SSH. So, so I'm going to take care of that this afternoon and deactivate that. I think, what are you going to the comp file? One of the configuration files, I think. SSH.conf or something? Something like that. It's
SSHD underscore config.
Oh, it's a config, not conf. Yeah, I'll find
it. I think it might be conf.
Okay, it's
SSHD underscore.
I remember fooling around with that file a couple years ago, and I haven't touched one since.
Every time we do an rsync at work, you have to edit that file.
Yeah. So anyway, but what it does, and I kind of like this, is it does it in segments, in different sections of your laptop or different functions in your laptop. And so that if you want to, it'll take a while to get through it all. So if you want to stop it, you can.
Yeah.
And then, you know, start it up later if you got time. But yeah, so I found that. I think I had the time server. I had a little time server issue. And I think, Matt, when you ran it, you had something similar on your system too. Was it you?
Ran
the time, was it the, did you run it? Did you run this tool?
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with the time server because I have NTP turned on like you should.
Okay. Well, I think, I don't know.
What was your index number?
Oh, I didn't see. I have 60. To go back.
60. Mine's at 46.
Oh, that number. Yes, mine's at 46
I think
too.
It's because I don't have hardening turned on, and you probably have SE Linux by default on yours, right?
I have it turned off.
Oh, you turned it off?
Okay, well, that's probably 60.
I have it in warning mode, so it lets everything happen, and then
it warns you.
Hey,
hey, buddy, you're almost honed.
Right.
Yeah, mine was 46. Now I know what you're talking about by index number.
But it goes through, mine checked things like the temp file system is on the root partition, so it gave me a warning on that. You know, things like default UMask on different systems.
What version are you guys running? Just curious.
Of what, the program?
It tells you at the bottom, the very last line.
1.3.0.
Are you? And you also are 1.3.0?
Are you, it'd probably be the same as his, because don't you pull off, are you pulling off Mint?
1.2.9 is what's currently in Fedora's repository, the ones I'm using.
Okay.
And Debian.
And it tells me that. It says that you're running an old version, you should upgrade.
Mm.
And,
Really?
And I'm not getting the same information, so I think that you're getting better information running 130 than I am getting.
Yeah, maybe they added some capability.
Actually, no, I think it's the Debian repository or whatever is the dev version, because I installed it on my Debian server, and it's the 129, and I'm still getting all the same stuff. On my Debian server, I got a 47 index. Again, I don't have hardening turned on, which I need to. And a couple other things, which I'm not going to say, because I don't want to invite hackers.
See, I'll right. read my results.
All of them? All of them?
The first one found possible unused IP tables rules. Warning, PHP option register globals option is turned on. Warning, PHP option expose PHP is possibly turned on. And warning, no, I don't have NTP running. I am sorry.
That's what you told me earlier.
I thought I did have NTP running.
That's what you told me.
I've got to fix that. You should have. I'd have lost. I got to fix that. I normally turn NTP on my machines.
Yeah, mine.
Because your time signature is real important.
It is.
When you're compromised, that's one of the first things they'll do is jigger that time. And
oh, well, Matt, think about it.
So,
no, but yeah.
But yeah. So I don't have password gauging on. My default UMass on Etsy profile should be more strict. I should disable USB storage when not in use. Disable FireWire when not in use. I check IMIT Google's rules. Change the registers global line to register globals off in my PHP. Change the allow URL F open line to allow URL F open off. Add legal banner to Etsy MOTD. Add legal banner to Etsy issue.
Tony, are you keeping track of the time here?
Etsy issue net. Audit daemon is enabled with an empty rule set. You know. I don't really have any major problems.
On your computer.
Yeah. Yes, on my laptop, as opposed to in my head, where I have many major problems.
Many voices. All right. Well, yeah. I thought the tool was cool, and I found it. I am on the site, and I love to say the name of the site: Unix Men. Unix Men.
Yes.
Unix Men.
Unix Men. Men.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I just could see this, you know, merry group of men, Unix Men.
Yeah.
It's like something from Monty Python is what I picture.
Yeah, so, but a link to that will be in the show notes. Not to our singing, but to the site. But I thought it was a pretty cool tool, and I'm glad you guys thought so too. So.
Yeah, you know, I found I was looking through the suggestions when I was talking, and I didn't do the warnings. And I had two things. I had the SSH allowed root login, and I had
see, mine does not say another SSH one. Root logins allowed, so maybe I have that turned off, and I only thought I had it turned on.
I just fixed it, so I am going back to I'm running it again. /etc/ssh/sshd_conf.
Ah, underscore conf.
I was right. Okay. You were. That's pretty good.
SSHD_conf.
Yeah.
At least on the Debian systems, that's
well,
what it
is. Well, it is on Fedora, Red Hat, CentOS.
Did you see what 51? Men, manly Unix men.
men.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, I love saying that site. So, and they had a great tool. It was mentioned on that site. So
the men had a great tool, what?
Oh, my God! Well, you know what I'm saying. Not that. But it was a great Linux utility.
Okay.
All right. Tony, all right. We're changing the name of our segment, too.
So I fixed two of the warnings. Right. One was the SSH thing.
While we were over here just making fools of ourselves, you're over there being productive.
I'm working, yeah.
You're working, okay.
I went up 2 points on the index.
All right.
So I'm now at 48.
Hey, we should have a little contest next week to see.
How many times do you have to press enter while that tool runs?
Too many.
Yeah.
I bet there's
it should just run.
I bet there's an option for letting it just cycle through.
I looked. I couldn't find one in the man page.
I will come back next week with a 100%.
Never happen.
I won't turn my computer on.
There's a -Q.
Huh?
I bet. is a dash lowercase q.
Oh, you think quiet will answer yes? Yeah. I was looking for like a all dash right. y to answer yes.
Okay.
Oh, invalid option.
Oh.
I did you just CQ. Maybe okay. I have to do C dash and then Q dash. Oh, there you go. Yeah, now it's running.
Okay.
And then it probably won't even pop up
the oh, you know what'll happen? At the very end, it'll pop up the list.
No, it won't. You'll have to go and read the log file.
Yeah, to go, yeah, probably have to go find the log file. And,
okay. Well, there you go.
Oh, you know where it is because if you have the previous one still on the screen, which if you just scroll up is there. It tells you at the end of that log file where it keeps the log file. It tells you at the end of its output.
Highlander has a...
tooltip? I use that.
Yes.
I use it all the time. That's very cool.
Can I mention
it's Pendrive
a cool
Linux,
tool to tilt?
Pendrive Linux Yummy Multi-Boot Tool Contractor.
Oh,
it
really?
It lets you make a multi-boot Linux...
On a pendrive?
USB.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I got to check that out.
Yummy works great. I have used Yummy also. It does. It's fantastic.
And they on that same site, they have both Windows versions and Linux versions. So I do it all for my Linux machine.
Yeah.
And
yeah, as opposed to UNet booting, which... oh, do they have a Linux version?
For what?
UNet booting. Yeah, they do.
I don't know.
UNet booting?
I think UNet...
Yes, they do.
I remember there was one that you had to use in Windows. So I used to do it at clients.
Oh, yeah. But that was, it might have been that, but it's now available on Linux. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we're definitely over an hour and, we're moving on to the next segment. Aren't we? Are we?
Yes.
So
we
what
are.
Is it? What is it time for?
It's time for, is it alive?
Is it alive? Chatter says that the tool is an EXE.
What tool?
Then that's the Windows version. There's a multi-boot.
There's Yummy for Linux. I know there is.
Well,
I've used it.
Either that or it's multi-boot. I don't know if it's Yummy, but
you're right. It might be called multi-boot.
Yeah. Yeah, the one I use is just called multi-boot. Mm-hmm. And it's very cool.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
During this segment.
No twist.
No, last week was twist week.
I know.
It was a crazy
twist
week. But we were sliding down the hill by then.
we were at the bottom. We were digging a hole.
We were, yeah.
It was a good twist week. I like that.
Oh, yeah, because it was different questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted to put something different out there. All right, but we're going back to our roots. Get it? Going back to our roots?
I get it.
Root login? Okay. All right. So every week, of course, I twist it, but as we said, this is not twist week. So this is just straight up. Is it alive or is it dead? Ready for the first one?
I am.
I was born ready.
All right. The first one is Blue Star Linux.
Alive.
Blue Star Linux. I'll say dead.
Blue Star Linux is an Arch-based Linux distribution packed with a wide variety of up-to-date software.
We have to end the show.
You must have been studying, Tony. You must have been okay, you better watch out, man.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Because at some point, you know, we're going to run out of distros.
That'll never happen.
I'll start making them up. I'll go to the SUSE build studio.
There you go.
Crank five of them out. All right. This next one is Makulu Linux.
Dead.
Dead.
It's alive.
Oh.
Makulu, it's actually, it's pretty recent. And its tagline is the chief has spoken or something. It's like a little hippopotamus. It's pretty funny. So you guys, that's okay, Tony. You're still leading by one.
Yeah.
The next one is called Debris Linux.
Dead.
Yeah, dead.
It's dormant for the last few years. For all intents and purposes, it's dead. I've not seen any releases. So, okay. That's pretty good. Next one is Dax OS.
Dead.
Dax?
Dax OS.
Dead.
How is it spelled?
DAX OS. Not to be confused with the German stock index called the DAX. Because, you know, I'm a financial
it's dead.
Nutcase. It's dead? You say it's both dead? It's alive. DAX OS.
I think
OS...
Tony is just answering the same thing I do so that he
He'll win!
Yeah.
Although if I went opposite, I would have been up by two.
No, you know, I never realized that. It's like, oh, that's an interesting strategy.
Yes. As soon as you get up by one, just answer the same thing that the other guy answered.
Well, you know how you avoid that, Matt.
Is we alternate.
Don't answer.
Yeah, don't answer until I do. Right.
Okay. All right. The next one is called Core Biz.
Core Biz, dead.
Core Biz? I think it is dead.
Tony's trying to make it not look like he's doing that. I was thinking, okay, Tony, let's see what you say. Actually, it's alive. It's a suite of Linux-based solutions for businesses. They've got like the base, and so it's called, you know, the Core Biz base, right. And then they got VoIP and asterisk, all that kind of stuff. So, all right. So, is that the last one?
Yeah, that was it.
No, there's one more.
Oh.
All right. So, should we make Tony answer first?
No.
All right. Because you know he's going to match you.
Right.
We know that's coming, don't we?
Yep.
All right. Zanbu Linux.
Dead.
I'm going to stay dead.
Shocker there.
I'm appalled. No, actually, it's alive. You remember Zanbu from years ago?
No.
Okay. It's, they call it the world's first hybrid computing system. It's one part desktop, one part web OS, but it's Linux. It's an easy-to-use Linux-based desktop environment with a complementary suite of cloud-based services. So, there you go. So, Tony, one by one.
By one. You know, and I had an inkling on most of those that it was live. I should have done it. I would have blown you out of the
water. Before we even started that,
yeah.
I just said to myself in my head, I'm just going to answer dead for everything.
Well, I think I only had two dead, four lives. So, all right. So join us next week for another edition of Is It Alive?
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
I only except have for one.
Yeah.
It's a good one, though.
From Lewis.
Yes.
Lewis was pretty upset with our quality of our podcast.
And Lewis, yes. So are we.
And, I'm sorry, yes. Lewis.
Lewis was so upset he offered to start a Kickstarter to buy us microphones.
But we already have microphones.
We already have microphones. Right. It was a different problem. So.
I think what would maybe help is a Kickstarter to for memory aids.
Yes, that would be what we need.
But this week should be much better, and it probably should be a lot easier to edit too, Tony.
That's right.
So I guess that was our listener feedback.
That was all I had.
Was there any on the G Plus?
Was there any feedback?
Yeah, there was a couple saying, "Yeah, we understand." You know, when I said it was going to be late or we had technical difficulties,
right?
But that was about it.
Yeah, a lot of people join our website. All from Poland. I don't know Spammers. What the deal is. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Featured music of the week.
What song are we going to pick?
The song is Debian.
Oh, you are going to use it.
I'm going to use actually.
In honor of Debian's release.
That's right. Actually, this isn't. I was playing one earlier that was called Debian, but this is a different one. It's by Zadui.
Zadui?
Z-O-D-I-O.
Z-O-D-I-O.
Zudio?
Yeah, Zudio.
It's called Debian. I have not listened to it yet, so this is the first time I'm listening to it. It's electronic dance.
It does not sound like
it's got
electronic
a violin.
Dance.
It's gonna,
maybe because it's
this
Italian.
This is just the intro.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 82. What was the name again?
After the Audio Carnage.
After the Audio Carnage.
Yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
Yeah. Well, on mine, I have my multi-boot. I have Ubuntu, Mint, I have TRK, AVG, I have the Windows Recovery CD. I can't remember what it's called. But you can go in. It also has a password cracker on it. And you can run something else. I have a Windows 7 boot recovery disk.
Is that the end of the song?
Oh, no, I stopped it here. Oh, we can keep it going.
I was
going
to say, it's kind of like lyrics, Debian, and you're just talking about...
Different... what else do I have on there? I have memory, memtest on there, and I have Clonezilla and Parted Magic. It's all on that one flash drive for multi-boot.
Oh, I've got to try that out.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I take that everywhere I go. So if a computer has a virus, I can boot to that, run the AVG, and it will, as long as Ethernet's connected, it'll update to the latest definitions and scan for viruses and malware. I can scan the hard drive with the, like if it's an NTFS partition, I can scan the hard drive with the Windows 7 recovery, and it will, check for bad partition or bad sectors and recover files. Clonezilla lets me do the boot in, recovery or copy file, or not copy, but image hard drive. My Ubuntu /mint install will let me log in and just do whatever I want. And a lot of times it's copying files off of the other hard drive.
You know, Dell has a tool that's better than Memtest. It grinds on the RAM. You can either tell it to grind for so many loops or grind forever. And when it when it detects a problem, it tells you what DIMM the problem is with.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
But Memtest does it does that work too, doesn't on it? Non-Dell it, computers? Does it work on like a Gateway or HP? Or?
Yeah, we use it on Super Micros all the time.
Okay. That's useful. Yeah, because I go on based on like, oh, is it in the after 128 megs or, you know, after a gig of RAM, then it's on the second DIMM.
Right.
But that's cool.
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo?
Cinco de si. Wado?
Cinco de Mayo.
Did you realize that Cinco de Mayo is the day after May the 4th be with you?
Yes. And did you realize that Cinco de Mayo just means the 5th of May?
That's right.
That's right. And tomorrow will be Seis de Mayo.